You're listening to the Totally Driven Entertainment Radio Network.
In the future, none of you are heroes.
You're legends.
Get driven. Stay driven.
When I think of all the years I wanna be with you, wake up every morning with you in my bed.
Welcome everybody back to the Bareback Facts, and I just decided to share you a little bit of music with you guys today. And eventually we'll get that. There we go. We got that handled. Welcome back, everybody. It's been a minute since we've been together, and now that we're back today, we're going to be talking about a couple of things. First off, we're going to be talking about love and popular culture, and I am going to be contributing to that conversation in a roundabout way by contributing my own verse, as it were, to the conversation. That's right. I am going to be sharing from my own personal collection that I recently published with Amazon, Iscariot Song, a collection of poetry dedicated to love in all of its forms. It is my fifth collection. But I'm only going to be sampling a few pieces for you guys today, and they're going to be relevant to what we're going to be talking about as well, because my collection is more than just an opus to love itself. It's also my critique on love in popular culture and on the way we perceive love in the world today. Before we get started, everybody, I want to remind you all that we do have a call-in number here. It's 718-508-9883. And if you guys would like to call in and converse with me, feel free to do so. Do keep it clean, keep it appropriate, guys. Let's be friendly. Now, today, for starters, I want to start by getting into this discussion of love and popular culture. Now, when I say popular culture, a lot of people are going to wonder what I mean by love and popular culture. What do I mean about this abstract concept of love and how it's portrayed in popular culture? Well, what I mean is, how is love being sold to us in the things that we consume in our popular culture? For example, film, music, and literature. What do we perceive? How are these things informing us and shaping the way that we view love? How do they influence the way that we perceive the concept of love? Now, there are a number of different books out there, and I won't be able to cover every single book that's ever been written on the topic of love, and we'd never get out of here. But if we look at some of the big ones, now, and we're going to look at various ways in which people, from a literary standpoint, have attempted to define love. Now, probably you're all going to be familiar with texts like the Bible. The Bible defines love in many different ways. But in so much as the most common love that it refers to is the love of a higher power for you. And this concept of love is intertwined, inexorably intertwined, with the concept of sacrifice. Love and sacrifice, forever entangled with one another. Going individual, I'm almost positive that you're familiar with the phrase, "For God so loved the world, he gave his only begotten Son, so that you might have life, and that more abundantly." Or verses like, "There is no greater sacrifice, there's no greater love than a man who would lay down his life for his friends." These are different. This is a different way of viewing love, and it is formulated how we view love for centuries. For many people, particularly in Western culture, have viewed love in this lens that love is a concept that must be, it requires sacrifice. It requires that you emulate a higher entity. That is the example you're supposed to be following, right? Supposed to be following the example of Jesus or God or any of the other prophets who were out there and who made sacrifices for their people, for humanity, for you. That's what you're supposed to be emulating in the outgoing, right? In the outset, this is what you're told from a whipper, right? From the time you're a whippersnapper. That's what love is. Now, another way of defining love in a literary context is it's often conflated with another concept, desire. But love and desire are not the same thing. William Shakespeare, many of his sonnets are, suffice to say, a little bit confusing for people trying to find love. For example, Sonnet 147, "My love is as a fever, longing still, for that which longer nurseth the disease, feeding on that which doth preserve the ill. The uncertain sickly appetite to please my reason, the physician to my love, angry that his prescriptions are not kept, hath left me, and I desperate now approve. Desire is death, which physic did accept. Past cure I am, now reason is past care, and frantic mad with evermore unrest, my thoughts and my discourse as madmen's are. At random from the truthly veined expressed, for I have sworn thee fair and thought thee bright, who art as black as hell, as dark as night." Now that's a little bit confusing, but considered by many to be very romantic. This, of course, depends on who is looking at the poem, of course. But you can look at numerous sonnets. We look at Sonnet 15. Let's take a look. "When I consider everything that grows, holds in perfection but a little moment, that this huge stage presenteth not but shows, whereupon the stars in secret influence comment, and when I perceive that men as plants increase, cheered and checked even by the selfsame sky, vaunt and their youthful sap at height decrease, and wear their brave state out of memory, then the conceit of this inconstant stay sets you most rich in youth before my sight." And here we see it gets a little bit more interesting. "Where wasteful time debateth with decay, to change your day of youth to sullied night, and all in war with time for love of you, as he takes from you, I engraft you new." You look at some of these sonnets. Now, Shakespeare, of course, being one of the more famous individuals who's written about love, and I say love with quotes, because in many cases, Shakespeare is not talking about love. Shakespeare is talking about desire, and he is desire and grappling with his own thoughts, his own feelings about the universe and its construction, his own feelings about what romance and what love are, and how do we disengage them from the concept of desire. Shakespeare attempts to do this in much of his work, but in many cases Shakespeare is still talking about desire. He's talking about lust. He's talking about this passion for someone else. But that's not necessarily love. That's not necessarily love. And if we look at the definition of love as given to us by the dictionary, let's just take a look at what the dictionary says. Love is defined by Webster as an intense feeling of deep affection, to feel a deep romantic or sexual attachment with somebody is one of the ways in which the verb to love is defined. But I think if we look at love, we get all these different variants of love, right? We get true love. We've got puppy love, true love, you know, love that lasts a lifetime. All these different ways in which people are defining it. It becomes confusing. It becomes too complex. It's an amorphous, an amalgam of things, of ideas and emotions that we've kind of compacted together to a point where we don't seem to know what it is anymore. Let's take it a step further. We look at things like we've looked at some of the earlier literary iterations, but now let's take a look at some of the other reiterations of love. And more time to remember not only the book series but also the film series Twilight, which was centered around a young girl and her relationship with a older man who turns out to be a vampire. But none of this is particularly important. What is important is how love is being portrayed in this particular series of books. How is love portrayed in Twilight? Well, the relationship that is portrayed in Twilight is an incredibly unhealthy relationship. If you look at everything that happens in the book series, the character, Bella, is grievously injured in almost every single book. She is near death at almost the conclusion of almost every single one of those stories. Her affection for the man in these stories causes her a great deal of strife. Pain drives wedges between her and her family. Not only that, but it almost costs her life on multiple occasions. And at the outset of this romantic adventure she attempts to embark on, her would-be voyeur isn't even interested. Or at least he puts on airs like he isn't interested. To show someone that you love them, you have to stay away from them. You have to ignore them. You have to push them away, because by doing so, you're keeping them safe from your baggage. You're keeping them safe from your problems. The Twilight series paints a very unhealthy way of viewing love. And of course, one might argue that, well, Dallas, the story ends happily, right? They get married, they have a little family, they work it out with those weird vampires from Italy. It's all good in the end, right? But is it though? Look at all the collateral damage they collect along the way. The people that die as a consequence of this relationship, the numerous injuries accrued by Bella, and the fact that she has to become undead in order to embark on this romantic relationship. She has to completely change herself, the relationship she desires. Now, I would say that it's not uncommon, nor is it necessarily a bad thing, that you change when you're getting to know someone or when you're in love with somebody. Changes do happen, but we want those changes to be for the better. We want to grow as an individual, right? We want to grow, and we want to be around people that make us grow. We want to be around people who make us better people. Part of loving someone is being there for them, but also making them better, elevating them. And by doing that, Your goal is to elevate one another and support one another, right? This is basic, you know, relationship 101 here. These are things that, you know, a reverend or a therapist or a marriage counselor would probably say to you. These are things we all know in the back of our minds, but it's so much sexier on paper, right, when we have this forbidden romance because Edward's not supposed to be there. He's, you know, this intangible, this wild card, right? He's not supposed to be there, and he's invading her room. He's got to be invited in, and it's dangerous and sexy. He's undead, right? He's a vampire. He's immortal. And he's going to make sure that his newfound lover is going to join him in this eternity. She's going to elevate herself by becoming immortal. But only, of course, when she embarks on this relationship, all she has to do is forsake everything she ever knew, leave her family behind. Oh, and not to mention the fact she has to give up her humanity. She has to completely change every single aspect of who she is. Every single detail of her life changes. Her outward appearance changes. Her very essence changes. Her inward appearance changes. Her very form changes. She becomes a vampire. She has to completely change from living to dead. She has to go from being around the people that she's known her entire life to giving all that up. Does so with the knowledge that she's going to outlive everybody that she's known previously. She has to now be with this group of vampires. She's going to be with them. That's the part of the story we don't get to hear about in this detail. Now, now that we've ragged on Twilight for a little bit and its portrayal of love, let's take a look at the book series 50 Shades of Grey. Oh, yes, because we're going to get into it. We're going to get deep. We're going to go deeper than they went. 50 Shades of Grey is an attempt to demonstrate this. It attempts to sort of show BDSM and that community in a better light. And it also attempts to show us this very sexy, you know, secretive, naughty, out there relationship between a rich and eccentric businessman and this chick that he barely knows, who becomes infatuated with him, this mysterious Mr. Gray who shows up all high and mighty, and he's got these rules that she has to abide by, and she must enter into a contract with him, and he's got to be in control. His desires for her are that he must be in control. Now, I know throughout the rest of the series, there's an evolution of this romance, and you find out that his desire to remain in control stems from the fact that at one point in time he was part of an abusive relationship, but his past experience influences his present and does so negatively. Once again, we see a situation in which a woman has to basically enter into a contract to be in this relationship. Fantasy is that he's rich and eccentric and he's handsome and charming. And that's why it's okay. It's okay because Mr. Gray is handsome and charming and rich. So it's okay that he lords all this power over this young and impressionable woman, because he is a man of culture, a man of sophistication. But is it okay? Is it really okay? If we look at their relationship in the early goings of the story, their relationship is incredibly unhealthy. One might say borderline abusive. Now, I know this might, you know, take a little backlash for, you know, me talking about this very popular book series, and that's fine. I understand. And you're probably going to say, well, Dallas, what makes you think you can do better? What makes you think you know better than these writers do? Well, because these writers are attempting, what I do know is that these writers are attempting to tap into something a little bit different than love. They're not even attempting to reconstruct this idea, this concept of love for you. Passion, this untamable, unquenchable fire that exists within us, that we ourselves are animals beneath the surface, incapable of truly comprehending what is good for us. And we want to seek out these forbidden, secret pleasures. Deep down, we want to be bad. And that's what these stories are really getting at, right? They want us to tap into that other part of our, that darker part of our psyche, right? That part of our psyche that says it's okay for us to discard our morality or our self-respect, our dignity. We can lower ourselves if we need to for passion and desire. We can be pathetic to get what we want. And that's okay. What I'm getting at here, these stories are not telling you from a realistic standpoint what form, what we can look for in a healthy relationship. They are selling us sizzle, but not steak. They are selling you the temporary, but not the permanent. And this isn't going to get religious. This is not what I'm getting at. I know some of you are thinking, oh, no, he's going to get religious. Guys, you've known me longer than that. You know I would never do that. Listen, these people are selling you that temporary pleasure. They're trying to hit those special buttons in your mind, get those nice endorphins flowing, get you home and thinking about all that naughty stuff you could be doing. And I want to be fair. To the credit of these authors, not only are they are doing a few things that are positive. They are doing a few things that are positive. Not Stephanie Meyer. She's not doing anything positive, in my opinion. Her work is garbage anyway. And if you think that I care if people like it or not, I don't care. I've read it. I've seen it. It's awful. It's atrocious. writing, it's bad storytelling, in my opinion. That's my personal opinion about Meyer. Now, in the case of 50 Shades of Grey, it's not a bad story, and you can see in the story some of the things that are attempting, that the author is attempting to highlight for you. But most people are getting lost in this very odd, you know, uneasy, tenuous relationship that exists between Grey and his new soon-to-be protege, and his, and of course, soon-to-be lover, but eventually wife, maybe, you know, whatever. But you can see where we're going here. But the things that are good about 50 Shades of Grey, the things that I will say that are positive about it, is it does, in my opinion, my own personal opinion, and some people might disagree, it does, in my opinion, it does take away some of the demonization of the BDSM that's gone on of people participating in the BDSM community. And I know it suffered some backlash from people within that community because they felt like it didn't accurately portray the types of relationships that they're in. And to be fair, I think that's probably true. But also fair to the author and to be fair to the filmmakers, you know, they weren't trying to really do that. They were trying to tell the story in the book. They were trying to tell this story of this dynamic between the two characters in the book. And, you know, they can't get it all right. Nobody ever gets everything right. Even me, I'm not always right either. And I always feel, you know, I always say, feel free to challenge me anytime. I'm willing to listen to alternative opinions. But what I will say is, I do think that it didn't do the greatest job of painting them in a positive light, but I think it did do a little bit to make that a little bit less taboo. And I think that's a good thing. I think that is a good thing. I don't think people who are consenting adults participating in what makes them happy should be demonized for that. I don't think they should be ostracized for that. If they're not hurting anyone, you know, I think that's great. I think that's fine. They're not hurting anybody. They're not bothering anybody. You know, everybody involved, the parties involved are consenting. Good. Gravy. I think that's fine. And I think that in that way, 50 Shades of Grey is kind of a positive in that way. But what I don't think is positive about the film is something else entirely. But before I get to that, I do want to point out the other thing I find positive about it. I do think it's positive that they portray the effects of prior abuses suffered by an individual and how those things impact an individual mentally and emotionally when they interact with other people. In that way, I think 50 Shades of Grey, the series, does a fair job. I think they do a good job of that. Now, what I don't think they do a good job of is setting the expectations for what is a healthy relationship. This series does not show you what love is. It's painted as a romance, and a romance is supposed to be about love, but it's not a romance. It's something else entirely. A romance, one might argue, can possess desire, can possess instances of desire, and that's fine because desire can lead to love. But the fact is, that series does not do a very good job of showing you a healthy relationship where these two people elevate one another and they're so in love and they've constructed a healthy, you know, relationship with one another where they're on even ground and everything's out in the open and it's good and hunky dory and it's what we want. What it's, you know, and it doesn't. And I'm not saying everything has to be wholesome, but you know, it can be healthy. That would be nice, but you don't get that from this series. And if you'd like to argue in the opposite of that, that's fine. But you don't get it in that series. It doesn't happen. You look at that series; it's not about a healthy relationship. But that's what's become popular now. That's what's become popular. Now I want to step to another medium. We've looked at literature. And we've looked at, you know, earlier literature, and we've looked at the now. Let's take a look at film. Now, there are a plethora of movies that many would call chick flicks, romantic comedies, what have you. There are a number of movies within that vein of romance, romantic movies that you watch and they inspire you and you feel so good. You watch them, right? It's all going to work out in the end. But let me chart the plot of nearly every single one of these movies. With few exceptions, this is almost exactly how all these movies work. Enter in a young, well, maybe not necessarily young, let's enter in a woman of mid-age, you know, from the age of 25 to 40. Let's go with that. Life is challenging. She's going through all these stressful changes in her life. Maybe she just got out of a bad relationship. She's trying to put all the pieces together. She's not looking for anything. And then she meets this guy by happenstance. And they hit it off. They start talking. They get close to one another. There's some exchanges. You know, things get a little heated. One of them has to step away. There's a conflict. One of them must step away. You know, maybe their family doesn't approve. Maybe their religion got in the way. Maybe his ex comes in. Ultimately, the conflict doesn't matter. What does matter is the resolution, right? We get the resolution. It all ends with the two of them face to face at the end of the movie, and they say a witty cutting line from something so cutesy that they had exchanged earlier in the movie, and they kiss, and it's great, and it's grand, and you're left wondering, oh, well, you're left assuming, yes, it all worked out. Love prevailed. It won out in the end, right? No. Every single one of these movies has almost the exact same formula, a realistic portrayal of love. They don't give us an idea of what we're supposed to be looking for. They lead you to believe, in most cases with these films, that it's all just going to work out, that no matter what happens, it'll all just work out in the end. And you see these movies, in most cases, it's almost through no real effort on the part of the characters, the way it comes together. It's so organic and so well done. It's just, you know, things just sort of work out. The misunderstanding just clears up, and they're just together, and it works out, and there's no hard feelings afterward. But I know the truth. I know every one of you that's listening to the show has seen one of these movies, has seen multiples of these movies. And at the time, you felt good. Maybe even some of us guys might have felt a little bit bored. Some of the women might have found themselves a little bit bored. So, to be honest, some of these movies are just not that great. But we all took a moment, whether we realized we took that moment or not. You know, maybe we forgot we took that moment, but we took a moment and we realized that's not how that would work. I wouldn't have let him get away with that. I wouldn't have let her treat me that way and just welcome her back with open arms. You know, how dare she, after everything we went through together, how dare she go out with that guy again? After everything we've been through together, how could he be so blind? How could he fall for that again? We all have seen these films and seen their plots unfold before our very eyes and said, that would not work. That would not happen. There's no way it would just come together like that. That there would just be such an outpouring of forgiveness and they're just going to get together now. It's going to be fine. It's okay. Their love is strong enough to get through anything, right? We see these films, and they sell us this dream. They sell us this dream that Mr. Wright is out there. Mrs. Wright's out there. She's that girl you've been just not noticing the whole time, right? But then she gets a makeover, and she becomes more confident in herself. And then you notice her, have her, and you go after her, and you realize you've got so much in common. It all works out. In the end, I just literally described the plot of She's All That. Good, entertaining movie. But You see where I'm going with this. You guys are seeing this, okay? You've seen these movies. They dominated the 90s. Romantic comedies and teen tryst movies dominated the 90s. People of my generation, people that grew up in the early 90s, we all saw these movies. Your siblings watched them. You were stuck watching them with your older sister or your little sister or whatever. Maybe you had a guilty pleasure for chick flicks. Some of us did. Some people, you know, I'm just going to tell you, some of those movies are pretty good. You go on enough dates, you'll find out. But you look at these movies, and you can see right down the – you can almost check a list of things that are going to happen in this film. Oh, look. Look at this. He's woken up from his coma. He doesn't know who he is. He's fallen for his old flame. But it's okay because his girlfriend's going to remind him of everything. She's going to be there for him. They're going to work things out. Down the line, she's going to bring him something that only he would know, only the deep inner him would remember her, giving him that gift. And it's going to flip the switch in his mind. He's going to remember everything, and they're going to be okay. They're going to get back together, and it's going to be great. She's not going to have any hard feelings about it, even though he was running around on her with her best friend. That's fine. They're going to work it out. They're going to work it all out. All these movies that we see now, that's how they sell love. They sell it to you like you're an invalid, like you're a moron. If you don't know what's going on. And so many people have bought it. Before the show started, I played a movie called, or a song, I should say, Marry Me by Jason Derulo. But in it, he's not just talking about marriage. He's talking about sex and his girl's body and how good she looks, right? You listen to all these songs and you only have to listen to a few of them to realize before long that it's all about getting the girl home from the club and getting in her pants and having a little dance, right? Sounds good on paper, doesn't it? Sounds great. It all works out in the end for them. It's great. We get Ariana Grande's Dangerous Woman. Ooh, how romantic. You make me feel like a dangerous woman. You make me feel good about me. I need you to make me feel good about me. That is the core, the center, the absolute essence of what we're talking about here today. That is what love has become in popular culture. They have told you that you need somebody else's approval. You need somebody else's affections. You need somebody else's love and desire and admiration and compassion for you to feel good about you, and then you'll find your value. That's what love is. Love is a validation. Now, love is validation. Love is admiration, adulation. That is what they're selling you. You can't just you look at these pop icons, the Ariana Grandes, the Ushers, the Neos, all of their songs are the same. They talk about the good-looking guy or the good-looking girl and how they've been eyeing you from across the club, and they have taken an interest in you. And that elevates you because you're hot, you're sexy, and they know it, now you know it. Now when he gets you back to the crib, girl, he is going to show you a good time. He's going to make you feel like $150 million. And you ain't going to have to worry about nothing. That's how these songs sell everything. And for the guys, it's even worse. They sell it to you. All you need is the money, the cars, the bling, and that girl is going to find you. You don't have to go looking for her. She's going to find you. That good-looking girl that you're going to be in love with for the next 30 years, she's going to be attracted to your money and your power and your fame, and she is going to be there for you. She's not there for the money and the power and the fame. That's just what got her there. You know, that's just what roped her in. That's just what suckered her in to get close so you could have her, right? That's what that is. That's what gets her in. But once she's close to you now, now you've got her, and now she's really in love with you. She spent a little time with you. And sure, you had to spend some money on her and everything, but that's okay because she's in love with you for who you are. And she's going to tell you that so long as you keep spending that money. But you're not going to care because, you know, you got all that money and all the power and the fame and the fancy cars. It's all about the money and the bitches, I'm telling you. If you get enough money and you get enough fame and you get enough cars and you get enough bling and you get enough drugs and you get enough of this and this and this and this, then somebody will love you. But only if you get all of that stuff in order. Only if you got the right job, the right car, the right people you're hanging around with. You got to hang out in the MVP club, the big ballers. Then you'll find love. But not the average Joe, not the scrub, not the working man. He's got to go out and work for it. Now, it depends on what genre of music you're looking at, but if you look at one of the more popular genres of music, which would be hip-hop and R&B today, this generation thinks that all I need to get love is money. And once I got money, love will come later. That's what they've sold you. They're not selling you love. They're selling you admiration and adulation. They're selling you the concept of prestige. They're not selling you love. They've conflated the two. You can't even find it in those songs anymore. And you hear those songs, those R. Kelly bump and grinds, and you think to yourself, yeah, buddy, that's what love is all about. But that ain't what it is. That ain't where it is. They're not selling you love. They're selling you one-night stands, trips to the hospital, and a lonely, lonely-ass weekend. That's what they're selling you. Because you know what? You do half the things those rich people do, and you end up either dead, in jail, or with a hell of a hangover all by yourself. Because when you start acting like that, you start acting like a damn fool. Because that's how we all act when we get under the influence of this stupid crap. That's what these people are selling you. They're not selling you love. They're selling you bullshit. And they're expecting you to buy it, and we do. I do it, you do it, we all do it. We all listen to music, we all watch movies, and we all keep going back for more. And why do we keep going back for more? Because, hell, it's entertaining, isn't it? We want to see good-looking people shake their asses, and girls. We want to see good-looking guys out there. We want to see these guys sing. We want to see these girls sing. We want to see them dance. We want to be like those big guys out there. We want to be like the NBA guys who got the $50 million contract and the good-looking girl on his arm. We want to be like these NFL players who've got all the fancy cars and the good-looking girls. That girl probably doesn't even know what that guy's name is. Now, I'm sure there's a handful of them out there that actually do care, and I've talked to some of them on previous shows, and their families love them. It's not all that way. But if you look at the way it's being sold to you on the television screen, it's unrealistic. We all want to be big money Mayweather, right? We want to have the clubs and the Bugattis and the ladies. We want or if you're a man or a woman, whatever, you want what you want. But you want these things. And these people are telling you the formula, the recipe for success. The only way you get love is to be successful. Now, if you look at other music, you know, country music, sometimes they can be a little bit, you know, they can get a little bit close to a more healthy portrayal of it. But even they are selling you an unrealistic expectations. Even they are selling it. You got to get her on your tailgate. If you got the right truck, if you play the guitar just right, if you wear the right boots or you have the right hat, you're from the right small town. You're from the right area. You got that sexy southern drawl. They tell you what you've got to have. You've got to have these things. These are the things you got to have, and that's what will get you love, baby. But that's not true. And I think we all deep down know that's not true. Some of you are going to say, well, Dallas, you're kind of overanalyzing this, don't you think? Don't you think you're going at these people a little hard? You think you're being a little bit harsh? I don't think I'm being harsh. I think I'm being realistic. I think we've lost the concept of love. We've conflated it with desire and admiration, adulation, worship. That's what we've conflated it with. And we haven't helped ourselves along the way. Religion hasn't helped us because we've continued to conflate love with worship and prostration before something better than ourselves and higher than ourselves. When in reality, what we should be doing, what we've always supposed to have been doing this entire time, the thing that we should be doing every single day is learning before anything else to love ourselves for who we are. That is what we should be doing, what we should have been doing, what we must do in the future. Only when you find actually love who you are as a person, only when you grow yourself as a person and find love and passion and admiration for yourself. And I don't want you to conflate that with being arrogant or being cocky or being headstrong, thinking you're better than everybody else. What I mean is you've got to come to an appreciation for you and who you are as a person. And once you've come to that realization of who you are as a person and appreciate that, and you've come to understand that, when you come to understand yourself and you come to appreciate who you are and what you've done and what you have accomplished and what you plan to accomplish, you've got to take that time first. Before we go any further, because we do have a few more things to cover before I do some readings, I'm going to take a commercial break and give myself a chance to catch my breath and give you guys a chance to stop hearing me kind of rant and rave here a little bit. So I would like to remind you all that we do have a proud new sponsor here at Totally Driven Entertainment. He's fun, he's wacky, and he's crazy. Check out ChrisFraleyPresents.com for some very hilarious content. And when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about this concept of self-love and self-value. And then we'll talk about, I'll do some samples from my work.
I'm black man, saving man's eyes, one stereotype at a time.
To the black mobile. To the corner of Martin Luther King Street and Malcolm X Boulevard, pronto.
Will black man make it to the crime on time? Or will he be on CPT? Stay tuned at ChrisFraleyPresents.com.
Attention business owners, website owners, event promoters, or anyone looking to promote your product. The Totally Driven Entertainment Radio Network is the perfect way to spread the word of your business around the world. That's right, you can advertise at our network and be played on all of our shows at rates that are so cheap, it's a no-brainer. For more information, contact Bay Ragney at bayragney@gmail.com. To keep your business driven, stay driven with Totally Driven Entertainment.
Are you a fan of Sherlock Holmes? Letters from Holmes offers unique, one-of-a-kind letters from the world-famous detective himself. Handwritten on 8.5-inch by 11-inch aged parchment paper and using smudge-free ink to produce original, high-quality letters that fans will treasure for years to come. Each letter is handcrafted and written from the perspective of Sherlock Holmes, mimicking Holmes's native tongue and embracing many of the famous detective's quirks, quips, insults, and peculiarities. Order a love letter, birthday greeting, personal correspondence, or more only at www.etsy.com/shop/lettersfromholmes.
For $5 today, you can buy a wealth of things. Gas for your car, rent a movie for the family, a few slices of pizza. $5 still takes you a long ways. But did you know that $5 can buy your child a bag of heroin in the streets? That's right. For only $5, your son or daughter can buy some of the cheapest and purest dope in the country. Be aware of the lies. Be aware of the stealing. Be aware that's all it takes to kill your child. $5. This message was brought to you by Casey's Cause, a group of parents located in Southern Chester County out to save your child's life. Come join us today at www.caseyscause.com. And remember, $5 is all it takes. Casey's Cause, www.caseyscause.com.
Looking for that perfect gift for your girlfriend? Then look no further than Teddy Scares. Teddy Scares are available in a variety of styles, sizes, and prices for all your shopping needs. Teddy Scares are a mix of cute and creepy to make a great gift for almost any age. Board up your windows, lock your doors, and log on to TeddyScares.com. And be sure to become our friends at Facebook.com/TeddyScares.
Calling all comic book fans. Do you collect comics? Did you ever collect comics? Do you think your children might like reading comic books? Do you even know they still print real, paper, non-digital comic books? Well, then visit the Pirates of Ontario Street Comics in Philadelphia. We have a massive collection of comic books, action figures, trading cards, and much more. We have one of the largest stocks of back-issue comics in the area. We bag and board every new comic book at no extra charge. Our store is voted the best comic book shop in the 2013 PHL 17 Hot List Contest. Part of the movie Unbreakable is filmed in our store. We are open 7 days a week. Ontario Street Comics is located at 2235 East Ontario Street in the Port Richmond section of Philly. Our phone number is 215-288-7338. Type in the words Ontario Comics Philadelphia to check out our wacky stores page on Facebook.
Welcome back, everybody. Hope you enjoyed a slight reprieve. Now, before we went to break, I told you guys a little bit about this concept of self-value, self-love. You see, what I believe about love is that before you could ever possibly appreciate anyone else, you have to appreciate you. Now, in today's society, we're inexorably intertwined with social media and all these dating sites and all these things that allow us to pursue one another without really putting in any effort. You open your Facebook Messenger and say, "Baby, let's go out Saturday night." You can flip on Bumble or Tinder or Plenty of Fish or Match.com or eHarmony and take a little quiz, and you'll find somebody who is compatible for you. You just got to check the right boxes and you'll find that special somebody. But I think reality game, we've complicated how to maintain and have relationships. We have complicated it to the point where it's almost impossible for single people that are young or any age for that matter to find any lasting, fulfilling sort of relationship in this world. It is difficult. And no, it is not sour grapes for me. I have seen my friends attempt dates. I have tried it with some success, I might add. But right now, I have decided that I decided to become more introspective and see what it is that holds me back. What is it that holds us back from maintaining healthy, long-lasting relationships with one another? And I don't just mean romantic and sexual relationships, but what is it that holds us back from having long, fulfilling relationships with other people? Even friendship. Friendships can end in an instant now because of all the social mediums that we have and all these high expectations and the political climbs and the way the social strata is. You can't keep up with everything anymore. You just can't. You say one thing and you've lost 50 friends and that is it. So what is it that helps us build? What do we need to do to build these lasting relationships? What do we need to do to find actual love in all the confusion and the bright lights? How do we get starts with working on ourselves first? You've got to be willing to put in time to make yourself a better person. And I don't mean necessarily by society's standards. I mean, what is it about yourself that you don't like? Why don't you like yourself? And when I say that, I know some people are going to say, but I do like myself. I love myself. But do you really like yourself? I think every one of us has days where we don't feel like we like ourselves very much. And we kind of wonder why other people would like us. And some of us don't. We've got ego and we've got a lot of people have a fair bit of confidence. You know, there's a lot of people out there with a fair bit of confidence. This question doesn't really enter in their mind very often, but when it does, it's pretty crippling. What don't I like about myself? Do I like what I do? Do I like what I stand for? Do I like what my goals are? Do I like where I'm at in life? Do I like what I hope to accomplish. Do I really like my life? Am I passionate about what I do? Am I passionate about who I am? Things we have to ask ourselves before we start looking at other people. We have to find ourselves first. That's the first thing we must do. We've got to find out who we are. And once we find out who we are, we've got to understand that that's who we are. And we've got to understand that we need to embrace that. We need to cherish that. Because nobody can take that away from us if we don't let them. Nobody can take away who you are as a person unless you let yourself be taken. We've got to stand in confidence in the person that we are and the person we hope to become. That's the first thing we have to do. We've got to take ownership of who we are as people. Take ownership of who we are as people. We have to take that next step and determine the things that we would like to improve upon ourselves. What do we need to improve in ourselves to make ourselves appreciate ourselves more? The next thing that we have to do is realize that we have a value. We are worth something. You are worth something. How what you're worth and how far that goes is entirely up to you. What you define yourself as being worth and how far you take it is up to you. Some people have a high value for themselves. Take it anywhere. Some people have a low value for themselves, and they take it places they shouldn't take it. And some people are right there in the middle where they kind of value themselves a little bit. They chase a little bit, but they don't get too ambitious. The people that you can really tell are happy in their lives are the people that set a high value for themselves and then live their life believing fully that they are chasing that value, that they are getting out of their life what they're worth. That you see, they're happy most of the time. They're the people that they're not fazed by inconveniences. And these people exist. You see them all the time. You might probably even be annoyed by them because they're so chipper and happy. And they never seem to have bad days. And when they do, they just bounce back. They're so resilient. Why is that? It's because they love themselves. They love what they're about. They're in touch with what they're about, and they are cool with it. They've made peace with who they are as a person, and they have value for themselves, and they are chasing that value. They are pursuing themselves. And because of that, they are finding what they need to find in life, and that is joy and happiness. They are fulfilling themselves because they have figured out what they value themselves at, and they are chasing everything that they believe they deserve based on what they value themselves at. And they're achieving that. And that is where you find fulfillment, find happiness. It's not in necessarily material things. It's finding that place in life where you are content, where you are happy with what you're doing, where you're at, who you're around, your friend circle. You like what you do. You like who you are. You're in complete harmony with yourself. You're at peace with what you're all about. And when you find that place, and it doesn't matter what you do for a living, it doesn't matter how much money you have, when you find that place where you feel that you're comfortable with who you are and what you've done and what you've accomplished, you place these goals for yourself and you're reaching those goals and you're in the process of achieving the goals and you're on the right track and you know it, that, to really truly feel that you love yourself, that you are in love with yourself. And before you can love anybody else and appreciate anybody else and be in love with anybody else and have passion for anybody else, you have to have those things for yourself. You have to find that in you. Because what I have found over the years and what I have seen based on personal experience and based on what I've seen other people go through in their lives, about 95% of the time when things don't work out in life in regards to friendships or romantic relationships, 95% of the time, it's because that person didn't love themselves. And what I mean by that is they find that their baggage got in the way of potentially letting something grow whether it's their past experience with somebody else not working out, being so unpleasant. They don't want to give it a shot again. They're in that position where they don't like themselves too much because of what happened before, what they did or what happened to them, what was done to them before. And they can't let that go, and they're not ready to make peace with that. And because of that, they're in disharmony. They can't make peace with themselves, and that makes them not like themselves. Because they don't like themselves, they need that extra validation from the person around them. They need that person that they are involved with to raise them up on a pedestal all the time. They need that person to feed their to fend off their insecurity when they should be fending it off by themselves. They're insecure about who they are because of what's happened in the past or because of bad experiences or because they're just insecure about who they are. They don't know who they are, and therefore they're insecure. And because they're insecure, they need to be validated constantly. That makes relationship a lot more work than it ought to be. And that's not a loving relationship. That's not a healthy relationship. That's a parasitic relationship in which one person is completely dependent on another person to make them happy. And if you need somebody else to make you happy because you can't be happy on your own, you don't know what love is. You don't love that person. You want that person there. You need that person there because they make you feel better about you. And that's not love thing at all. That's not even desire. That's an attempt to feed your own ego. That's an attempt to feed on somebody else's energy, to feed on somebody else's life. There's a lot of people out there that are like that. Some of those people feel pretty bad about themselves now when we put it out there like that. But those kinds of people are parasites. They put you in an unhealthy relationship where they're dependent on you to be happy. And when you don't make them happy, it's your fault. It is your fault that they're not happy because you're supposed to make them happy, and they're not happy anymore because you're not doing what you're supposed to be doing, which is making them happy. You're not catering to their whim and reinforcing how great they are all the time because they need that from you. They need you to make them feel good, themselves feel good. And everything that happens in your relationship has to be dictated by them. They have to be in control. They have to have it all. It's all about them. It's not about you. It's about them. Because of that, it'll never work out. Because those people, those kinds of people are in relationships because they don't want to be, they can't stand being by themselves. That's why a lot of relationships don't work out these days, because the people involved in them, one or sometimes even both of them, are in a situation where they don't like themselves and they don't want to be alone with themselves. So because they're miserable, they want somebody else to be there with them to make them happy, but by extension also be miserable. Because they don't care if you're happy. And when they do say that they care that you're happy, it's only there to give their way of keeping you there so they can keep themselves happy. Because as long as you're there fulfilling their needs and giving them what they want, they're going to be happy because you're giving them what they want. And it's all about them. And that's what they need it to be about. They need it to be about them. The other thing that you've got to be aware of is make sure when you're actually in a relationship with somebody, you're in it for the right reasons. That feeds into what we were just talking about. Do you actually really genuinely want to know about this person? Do you actually care about their life? You care about their day-to-day life? You think about how their day is going? Do you think about what they think about? Do you care about their values? Do you care about what's important to them? Do you try to invest in what they're passionate about? When you invest your time and energy into what other people are passionate about, that's one of the signs of true affection for somebody. When you take the time to step out of your comfort zone and experience something somebody else is passionate about, and you don't have to love it, but when you take the time to step out of your comfort zone and try to show interest in what that person really cares about, that shows that you actually are in a position where you really care about somebody. And when they do the same thing for you, that shows that they really care about you. because they're not going to put themselves in a position. If somebody really cares about you, they're going to be willing to do those things. They're going to be willing to give you their time. They're going to be willing to put in their efforts. If they don't care, they'll put in a little bit of effort, just enough to shut you up, just enough so they can get what they want. And you'll be able to tell when they do it, because they won't put on a, you know, they won't try and really put on much of a front. They might moan and groan about it. They might, oh, I got to do this. All right, let's go see this stupid movie. You care something, you know? All right, let's go play paintball. I don't really want to, but all right, you always have to do what you want to do. That's when people just give in to give you what they want, when they just try to placate you, they don't care about you. They just want you to shut up. They don't actually care about what you want to do. They just want to do what they want to do, and they figure that if they just give you what you want right now and get it over with, that we can get back to it being about them. So you've got to be aware of that. Now that we've beaten this horse effectively into the ground and we have an idea about what we need to look for, I'll tell you guys, before we get to a couple samples from my work, I'm going to tell you what I think we need to be searching for after we've learned to appreciate ourselves. After you've learned to love yourself and appreciate who you are as a person, and you're at peace with that, you need to start seeking out people who feel the same way. Start looking for people that are trying to better themselves. Look at what they're doing in their life. Pay close attention to people around you. Pay attention to them. If you pay attention to people, if you watch, you're going to see who's walking the walk, who's just talking the talk. You'll be able to see those people. You'll be able to pick them out. And when you see the person that's walking the walk, who's doing what they say they're going to do, who's all about who they are, who's passionate about what they do, who's living life with zeal and just really getting after it, that's how you know that person has found their peace. They have found who they are, and they're at peace with that. Now, not everybody's going to be at that point in their life at the same time. And some people need a little help along the way, and that's fine too. And I'm not asking you to settle for a finished product. I don't think everybody, I mean, I'm not asking you to demand that the person you were with be finished, that they be the perfect version of themselves that they can be. Because I think it does take both sides of a relationship to make that happen, to bring out the best in one another. But what I will say is you want to be around people, friends and romantic relationships included, that make you better. Only surround yourself with people who demand you be better than you were yesterday. People who challenge you to be a better person are the people you want to be around. Those are the people that you can depend on. Those are the people who loves you. That's who loves you. And whether it's your friends, your family, or your significant other, if they are challenging you to be better, they care about you. Anybody that is holding you back, that is not trying to challenge you to be better, that is not pushing you to where you need to be going, that person doesn't really care about you. And you need to evaluate that relationship. I've got some friends who have been friends with me 6, 7, some of them even 10 years. And they push me to be better. They challenge me. They say, Dallas, they'll call me and they'll say, Dallas, what are you doing? And I'll tell them what I'm doing. And they'll say, don't you think you could do this? Or don't you think maybe you could do this? Or Dallas, I've got suggestions for you. I've got feedback for you. I've been watching you. I've been paying attention to you. I've been paying attention to what you've been saying, what you've been doing. And this is where I think you've gone astray, or this is what I think you're doing well. People that call you and say, hey, man, how are you? And mean it, Those are the people that are your friends. And those are the people that love you. They're the ones that actually care about you. That's what love really is. It's time invested. Love is an investment more than it is anything else. It requires effort. It requires constant effort on both sides. And there is an expectation with an investment, right? With an investment, there's an expectation. And with that expectation is that there's going to be a payoff. There's going to be a payout. We're going to be able to collect on something, right? So what kind of thing can you collect on in love? If love is an investment, what are we collecting? These are the fruits. These are the nuggets for the day for you guys. These are what you are going to want to remember. If love's an investment, things that you're collecting off of this investment. Number one, support. And when I say support, I don't mean you just absolutely must have this person around. They must be there. No, I mean a person who keeps you honest. Accountability and support, hand in hand, are two of the big benefits that we're looking for when it comes to love. Accountability and support. When I say accountability, I mean somebody who holds you in check, challenges you. You mess up, or you're given less than your 110%, that person needs to be there. They're there, and they're the ones that tell you, hey, man, you're slipping. Whether it's professionally, whether it's in different aspects of your life, these are the people that come to you and say, hey, man, what's wrong with you? This isn't you. You need to get back to what you're about, man. This is not what you're about. This is not you. I know you in this. Accountability and support right there. Their support comes in the form of being there when you need them to be there. You ever picked up the phone and called somebody and they never answer? You need them for something, they never answer. But they call you, right? They call you when they want to talk. They call you when they need something. They don't ever just call and say, hey, how are you doing? Things. How's your family? How's your job? How's your life going? Support. That's the second thing that we're getting from this investment that we're doing here. Love's an investment. And out of that, you want accountability and support. The next thing that you want is motivation. Motivation. People that love you want to motivate you. They want you to be the best person you can be, but they want you to succeed. People that want you to succeed are so important. People that want you to succeed, that they are wanting your success to happen. They are striving with you. They want to see you succeed. They keep telling you. They keep pushing you. They keep encouraging you. They tell you, don't give up. You can do it. You're going to make it. You're the best at what you do. You can do this. You're going to be the best someday, but you got to keep going. Don't give up. Don't slack off. Motivation is one of the things that you get out of love. And lastly, the last thing that you get out of love, this investment that you're getting, is comfort. When you're at your weakest, when you're at your lowest point, you're going to find who, there's that old saying, you'll find out who your friends are, right? When you're at your worst, when nothing's going right, when you feel alone, beaten, and defeated, people that really care about you are the first ones there to come along and say, hey, man, this shit ain't over. Get up. You've been through worse than this. This ain't over. You've been through worse. You can get up, man. Come on, I'm here for you. What do you need? How can I help you? I'm here for you. Getting out of this investment of love, comfort. When you fall, that person is there to pick you up, brush you off, and put you back in the fight. Now, before we go off, guys, I'm going to share a couple pieces from my new collection, Iscariot Song. It's available on Amazon, and it's about love in its many forms. I want to share, there's some references in there. To Romeo and Juliet, so bear with me, but I hope you guys will find some value in it. This is what I call the secret. It goes a little something like this. I've often heard people speak of the foolishness of Romeo and Juliet. They talked about their youth, or how they barely knew one another, how they played a foolish game of poison-laced roulette, and missed what was in front of their eyes the entire time. In a world where love so often nothing more than hollow infatuation, Romeo and Juliet got lost in translation. It hardly surprises me that you don't understand the games of children, can't recognize the bliss that lies in simply waiting and wanting for a kiss. All of you mesmerized by the thought of the perfect body, the perfect voice, but you've left yourself alone. You live a life with only the illusion of choice. I'll tell you a secret that lovers keep to themselves. When love calls your name, nothing halts you in answering its summons. You'll walk through rivers of blood, march through fields of bodies and mud, and all manner of scream-filled hells. Not because you want to, not because the object you desire is beautiful. You'll do it because you must. You'll walk that path because you can't live without the person with whom you've given your heart in complete trust. Romeo and Juliet were called star-crossed fools who ran headlong into the abyss of the grave. But we should all hope to find the love they found, a love that lasts through the ages. In matters of the heart, the coward profits nothing. To love someone unconditionally is the very definition of brave. Now, before I move on to another sample piece, I want you guys to take a look at what I've constructed here. I took two of the most iconic figures identified with romance. Now, there's been a lot of criticism of Romeo and Juliet. You know, they barely knew each other. It's a star-crossed romance. It's very unrealistic, and it feeds into that whole argument I made earlier, right, of unrealistic expectations, an unrealistic plot that sells us on sizzle. But Romeo and Juliet, in the end of their story, come to the realization, care what everybody else is saying about them. Romeo and Juliet, even now in the story, those characters don't give a rat's ass about how we feel about them. They don't care about what we think about them. And they make that very clear with their ending sacrifice, where they die together. Now, one might say that's incredibly foolish. And to a degree, yes, it is. But it's the message that it sends to us. The message that it sends to us is that they knew something we didn't know. They knew that what they had was real. They believed in it enough. For them, it was real. We can call it puppy love, and we can call it a teenage infatuation and foolishness and just, you know, emotions out of control and hormonal impulses just taking over. But at the end of the day, Romeo and Juliet, they didn't give a shit about what we thought. They didn't care what their families thought. And they make that very clear with all the sacrifices they're willing to make, all the obstacles they're willing to tackle just to be together, just to be in the same room with one another. They're willing to risk everything just to be near one another. They risk it all. They don't even care that both of their houses fall apart at the seams. They are willing to do that just to be near one another. Not even to have one another, but to be close to one another. That tells us a lot about their value for one another. It tells us a lot about how they valued each other and what they thought about one another. Now, this has been portrayed as a story of foolishness and youth and foolhardiness, the dangers of you know, premarital, you know, sexual engagements and disobedience, but it's also a story about love, right? And how love really does kind of win out in the end. Because in the end, no matter how hard people tried to keep these two apart, nothing could keep them apart. And they would be damned if they were going to let anybody deny them the ability to be with one another. They believed it so strongly, they were willing to die for it. And they were willing to do it for one another. They were willing to die together. And even though it's kind of delayed, because Juliet's kind of late to the party on this one, it still works out in the end. Together, despite all the machinations of everybody else, they still end up together. Now, I've got another one that I want to share with you all. One second here, we'll get to it. And this one is a reference to a song that I heard years ago that I always found to be particularly humorous because of the intro. But this one's called Put on the Slow Cut. It goes a little something like this. Let's take it back to the way things used to be. First dates, second dates, make me work for it, romance me. I'll pick you up at 8 and have you home at a decent hour. I'll leave you guessing through the week about your beauty and its power. I'll bring you flowers at work and leave you sweets outside your door. I'll show an interest in getting to know you more. I'll open doors cold. I'll make you wonder if I'm the one with whom you'd like to grow old. I'll make you playlists that make me think about us. I'll give you my time and give your friends plenty to discuss. Let's make the world jealous of what we've got. Romance doesn't have to be dead. Let's sneak away from the party and hope we don't get caught. Turn up the radio and put on the slow cut. Love's not dead. Let's bring it back on the rut. Now, you may have noticed in this particular piece that what I'm saying here is I'm critiquing how fast we rush everything. It's always go, 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 go. Let's not invest any time in it. Let me just see what you, let's just go. Let's send each other naked pictures and let's get right down to business. Social media and having everything right there at our fingertips. And sometimes that's a bad thing. Sometimes we've got too much control over what we shouldn't really have all that much control over. Sometimes we've got too much of a reach. Sometimes distance is a good thing. Sometimes we need that distance. We need that chance to catch our breath. Sometimes we don't have to live in the fast lane. Some things need time. A seed in the ground. And every single day, come back to it and not see anything for weeks at a time, maybe months at a time. No matter how hard I pound my hand into the ground to make that damn seed grow, it's going to grow in its own good time. It's either going to do it or it's not. It's going to do it on its own. It's not going to do it because of me. Sure, I can water it and I can encourage it and I can help it grow and I can tend to it. But in the end, it's still going to take time. It's going to take time and an investment on my part to make it happen. Take some luck. It's going to take some fortune on the part of nature and investing its time into what I'm planting. But it's not just going to happen overnight. And if I could plant something like that, it probably wouldn't be very good quality. It probably wouldn't last very long. You know, I could build a boat. If I had the instructions to build one and I had all the materials, But if I try to, and, you know, I could probably do it if I took my time and read through, you know, read through what I was supposed to do. But if I just try to slap some shit together and just throw it out, probably not going to last on the water too long. It's probably just going to plummet and sink. And the same can be said for personal relationships with friends, family, and loved ones. If you don't invest any time in it, it's not going to last very long. It's going to sour pretty damn quick. Because people can tell when you're disingenuous. It may take them a little while to catch on, but when they do, they're going to realize that you're just not worth the time. That's why it's better to take your time and get to know that individual and know what they're really about. Enjoy that feeling out process, because that process is important. Another that I'm going to share with you guys, and then I think we're going to find a conclusion for the day. We're going to conclude the show today because we've been at this for a while, guys. And let me see here. Ah, here we go. I'm going to share with you guys one more piece once I find it. Give me just a moment, guys. Called Stand Beside Me. And it's also very short. Not all of these are very long. Some of them are very short. I have some very long ones, but I'm not going to share those today. This one's called Stand Beside Me. I don't need you to compare to the face that launched 1,000 ships. I don't need you to be my Krimhild or my Gunnir wife to lonely locks when my bow rips. I'd much rather you be in uncomfortable Brunhild and companion with who I can weather the storms. It's so tiresome to be caught up by what everyone else calls relationship norms. Boys search for mothers, and most men seek servants to please them at their leisure. I'm a warrior of the modern age, and I seek an equal to myself in every measure. Bear your shield alongside me and let us conquer the world together. United we stand, fast in the face of all life's wicked weather. Let us trample our doubters and burn the banners of our enemies. Let's live a lifetime of celebratory festivities. Together, let's find our kingdom and never relinquish it to anyone. Let's never give up on what we've begun. Guys, this one, I think, really encapsulates what my collection's really all about. Finding somebody that you're equal, that you want to stand beside you through all of life's challenges. And how do you find that? Get to seek out an individual who values who they are, who's ready to make that stand with you, somebody who you know that because you've invested the time and you've put in the effort, they have got your back. They're the ones that you've got to have alongside you. That is how you know you've got something that can last. You have somebody who sees the storms ahead, looks at you and says, "We got this." I hope you guys have enjoyed today's segment, and I hope you find some measure of comfort in it. And I hope you guys enjoyed some of my personal readings today. I think I've kept you all here long enough. And so I'd like to close by saying I appreciate everybody that's been listening so far, and I'm definitely going to be sharing more of my work on the air in the future. Perhaps, though, I will be changing some of the content for some of my other listeners. See, I'm working on a new collection. I'm very excited to say that it's almost done, and when it is done, I will announce its release, and I think I will share samples from it as well. So, with that being said, guys, I do want to say, as always, you guys will be able to catch me live on Sunday with Straight Football Talk at 9 a.m. Eastern Time, and be sure to stick with us here at Totally Driven Entertainment for all of our programming, whether it's Mojo's Sports Talk Show at 10 a.m. on Saturdays, or the Rock and Roll Show at 8 p.m. on Sundays, or the horror and grindhouse sleaze film show in the afternoons at 4 p.m. on Sundays, guys. Don't miss out on all of our programming. We've got a lot of stuff coming up. We've got some great interviews coming up for my show, State Football Talk, and a number of other programs on our station. We're going to be having interviews in the upcoming months. So you're going to want to stick with us. This has been another edition of the Bareback Facts, and I hope you guys enjoyed it. Do check out my work on Amazon, Iscariot Song. It's now available. Check it out. Hope you guys enjoyed today's show, and I'll see you all next time. Till then, guys, love yourself.